Well, good evening. I want to welcome everyone and thank you for coming tonight. Introduce our speaker. I've told many stories for a rookie like me who's only made 3 missionary trips and only 2 to Ukraine. I've told enough stories for about 102 trips to Ukraine. And now the man is here who can correct all those stories and give you the real information. Jim Dumas is a man that I met back in 2005, the first time I went to Kiev, and then again just this past year in May when I was there in 2007. He works with Jim Myers, who many of us know, and he's going to share some things tonight about that ministry there with the Myerses in Ukraine, but then beyond that, other additional ministries, including Egypt, other places where he's traveled, places where Katya is presently traveling in Madagascar, and just an assortment of things. So, the last thing I'll say is, I mentioned, I think, a couple of times when I came back that every student in the Bible college there is expected to have a ministry of some sort in the evenings or on the weekends or something outside of the school, in a hospital or another evangelism-type capacity. And one of the roles that Jim has there is he supervises all of those student ministries. And so that'll be a big part of what he will have to say here this evening. Okay? Mr. Dumas.
Thank you, sir. Let's see. How's the, should we say test, test, test? That's not what they say in Russian, but actually what they say is raz, dva, tri. They just count to 3. 1, 2, 3. My Russian is not very good. In fact, ya plohо govoryu po-rusky. But that means I don't speak Russian well. But I say that very well. So when I tell them that over there, they don't believe me. But I know enough to do some shopping, and I can count. But you go to a store, it's got electronic checkout. You know, they scan the items, the number comes up, you pay the number. It's not that hard. And yes, I do the cooking for your pastor. And he eats pretty much whatever I put in front of him. But I actually am not a bad cook. This has sort of surprised me in my declining years. I've got a lot better at cooking. I've always been good at eating. Now, actually, the reason I'm here tonight is because Brenda chased me down over on the internet just a couple weeks ago, and we got emailing back and forth. I think I was still over in Kiev at the time, and then she said, "Oh, I went to Bob's church, and he said something about Kiev." And she said, "Oh no, that's too big of a coincidence." And sure enough, it was me and it was Bob, and so he wrote me and said, "Hey, why don't you come up?" So really, what I just want to do is make a presentation, just show you some pictures of some of the ministries we're involved in. You've seen stuff from Jim and Phyllis. I work with them. I've been on Jim's board for probably about 10 years. And I worked for, I retired from the Marines in 97. Most of that was part-time in the reserves. And then in 2000, Southwestern Bell decided they didn't need me anymore. I said, "Here's a bunch of money. Don't come to work." I found out I was really good at that. In 93, I started going on short-term mission trips into Belarus, working in camps primarily. With the same organization that Jim worked with. He actually came on after I did. But this was all short-term stuff on vacation. And I just fell in love with the kids. And they were so open. I mean, just like anything you taught, they just wanted to be with you. They wanted to hear English. They were very anxious to hear the scriptures. The countries were very open at the time. And so I just started going back every year. And it kind of really grew on me. And I got to the point I was thinking about quitting my job and just figured, well, I think I got enough money I could live on, you know. And then about a year and a half later, this happened with the company, and God just opened the door. And so I was like, hey, I'm ready to go. So initially, I could only go for about a month at a time because I didn't have anyone to watch my house. And now I've got some people to do that. So basically, I live in Kyiv almost all year long. I come back twice, maybe. I came back in October for my own church's missions conference, but I only came back for 8 days. I spent a bunch of time in Egypt teaching also this year, and I'll show you some of the pictures of that. But mostly I just want to show you some pictures of ministries and things like that, just to kind of give you a frame of reference for some of the things that we're able to do and some of the doors that have been opened to us. And you know, we had the Bible college over there, and a lot of our students have either become pastors or missionaries in a sense in their own country. Some of our girls have gone to Egypt, and we're there for a while. We've got one girl in Madagascar right now, her second trip this year. And one of our students and his wife is in Iran right now, and they went to Afghanistan also. So we're really seeing a lot of, even though we don't have a big college, we only have 10 people in the school right now, and that's about the max that we've had. We're seeing a lot of success with a lot of these people going out and being very, very fruitful, and that's, of course, what we're really looking for. Madagascar. She wasn't originally supposed to go there. She was going to go to another country, but there was some disease in there, and they said, well, we're not going to go to there, so you're going to go to Madagascar instead. And this is going to come up in Russian, so I can translate anything I want. You won't know the difference. She's just got, Katya speaks, is an excellent translator. She's a really, really smart girl. She's superb at English. This is all in Russian, but she's in a city called Tomatov, or she's near that. It's not the capital city. It's on the coast. But then that's where they base out of, and then they go inland and do medical missions to get into the villages, and then from the medical missions, they start giving the gospel. And this has worked out so well. If you read the letter that I handed out, I think it's in this letter, it talks about the World Health Association has come in and liked what they did so much, they're trying to get everybody else to pattern on the way these people are working. Now, they're just, of course, the World Health Organization is only concerned about the medical stuff, but these people are giving out the gospel too. And one of the things that she talks about in there, she talks about the Evangel Cubes. I don't know if you've ever seen these before. We use these a lot. In fact, if anybody knows Robbie Dean, an acquaintance of mine, and he was reading the notes on the Evangel Cube one time, and he said, hey, they got the gospel right. So unusual for some of the things you find in stores. And this has just been, I'm very visual. And so I love to use things like this with the kids. She's talking about, I gave her three of these to take to Madagascar. She's given two of them away already. And she says she'll have 50 to 75 kids just trying to fight to see this because the pictures are actually small. If you've ever seen the Abeka pictures, I work from those frequently. And there's lots of different Bible stories off of those things. And they're much, much larger. But I tend to teach with pictures. You'll see some of the stuff I've got in here later on when I show you some of the Bible verses. I like to have the kids memorize Bible verses all the time. And first one we do is Vera Gospoda Isusa Christa I spasosya. Right? Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you'll be saved. Probably the most important thing they can learn, I think. This is taxis, she's saying. This is the taxis in the local cities. Notice the empty bottles. Things are quite colorful. This is she calls these the skyscrapers. Apparently, these are the biggest. They look a little old too, but they look rather Soviet too at the same time. So traditional ways versus new ways. People are just doing whatever they can to eat. Floods. Now this pontoon bridge. Our marine friend here will not understand what pontoons are. This pontoon bridge, where do you see it later? It's not going to be in the same shape. Pretty sure that's on this slide. Versus walking on this type of stuff, but you haven't even begun to see the worst. Now, this is Katya on the left there. She's wearing her Dolce & Gabbana shirt. That white shirt did not survive the trip. That was not a good color to take to the jungle. There's the Nissan Pathfinder four-wheel drive. I told her she should have taken me driving. But at the moment it's dead, too, I just found out. But what they do when they crash like this, they just basically have to, there's village people all over the place, and they want paid in euros, by the way. And also, Madagascar used to be run by the French, so anybody that's white is French to them. In fact, she's even been in some places where they were the first white face that they'd ever seen, and the people said, well, you must be telling the truth about your God because we've never seen a white person before and only God could bring a white person to us. But these people have no frame of reference whatsoever about the rest of the world, about like Israel. What's Israel? They don't know what Israel is. And that's one of the reasons why I gave her a lot of pictures and things to work from because, what's the cross? What are the Jews? What are the priests? They have no historical frame of reference. So you can imagine a lot of things would be very difficult to teach. And what they're going to do here is you wait until enough people show up and then they say, okay, we want this much money, and then they'll drag it out of the mud for you and get you going. Otherwise, you just got to wait till it dries. and they stack stuff up to the skies. I mean, this is third world country. Sometimes people tell me stuff like, "Oh, you know, you sacrifice so much to go live in Kyiv." No, I don't. It's not third world, believe me. Okay, we got Coca-Cola, we got stuff like that. This is third world. They go out for about 10 days, and what they do is they build a medical mission hut in different villages, and then they start serving the people, and then meanwhile they're teaching them too. But usually what she says is that what they found out is that things really don't get working real well until once they get this medical hut built. But then once they've established themselves, the people accept them quite a bit. And villages that they've gone to that they thought would never work while they were trying to build this stuff, once they go back, they find out things are working really, really well, and the people are very, very receptive. The problem is that you have local people who have become believers trying to start teaching, and they have no frame of reference on the Scripture whatsoever. So even if they have the Scripture in French and they can read it, they still don't, you know, historically, geographically, linguistically, they've got no frame of reference for this. Occasionally it'll rain so much that the truck can't come and get them, and then they stay longer and they eat lots of bananas. She went to some training, and this is the result of it in the lower left-hand corner. They're eating chicken. In one of the first letters she wrote, she said, "And I finally got to put into practice turning the live chicken into the fried chicken." She went to some training in Switzerland for this, believe it or not. And in fact, she had to learn to speak French because her whole team was French-speaking. But she's smart enough, she picked it up without a problem. Whereas I studied French for 7 years and I've already forgotten all of it. However, that was a long time ago. She invited me to come down there, and I said, "You know, I don't handle the heat quite as well as I used to. And I'm really fond of privacy and sleeping with a group of 10 with the bugs. I've got other places I can go." Here's church. More of the church and ministry there. Now here they're going to go off into some, they're going to go to some villages that no one's gone to before. I mean, and there's a lot of places like that that are just really isolated. You know, typical guitar player, he's still playing his guitar. I can't believe this. But he's French. The mud will just pick you up and carry you away. As you see, he's sunk all the way down to his bottom. Now, this right here, this little flat thing, this is a local altar where they would kill an animal or something like that and just worship some, you know, spirit god of some type. So that's what they run. It's not real strong, but very animistic, of course. But people don't have clocks and watches. So, you know, when you start a service, you start saying, what they do is they just get a PA system, or they get something where they can make a lot of noise, and they just start singing, and eventually people say, "Oh, all right, something's going on." And then when you get enough, you get a quorum, then they start teaching. And French. They will teach in French, and then they've got local translators, and sometimes they got to go through several languages, depending upon how far out in the bush they get. You eventually get to other dialects. So you talk about having to keep the gospel simple, you know, you have to. And that's, again, that's why I like, one of the reasons why I like pictures. I may eventually go with her sometime. We'll just have to see. That's a future event. She wants to go back. There are some of the places they built. And this is some of the school kids. Prayer meeting. And now they're planting rice and they're reaping rice. And I thought, man, she was only there for 3 months. This stuff grows fast. But it's two different fields. So, but as warm as it is down there, I guess they've got growing season all the time. So, but she said she ate a lot of rice. And this is the finished medical facility for this location. And then they train, they get people trained how to, you know, be sort of like, you know, nurses for this. And doctors go by periodically. And the doctors they send are Christians. They're involved in the same mission. And it's, you know, you got a captive audience when you're treating people like that. That's some of the work they're doing in building it. And they're getting ready to go back at the end of one of their trips. And she's a great kid. She's worked with me. Usually she's been working during the week, but she's translated for me on Saturdays a lot of times in detention centers and orphanages and some other places that we were ministering at. And she's really good. She's very compassionate to the children. One of the places that we go to, or we were going to in Kyiv, is a place where a lot of runaways go. And being a girl, a lot of the runaways that are young teenagers or mid-teenagers are running away from an abusive stepfather relationship. And I've seen her be very, very compassionate in that. Notice this is that pontoon bridge after a storm. Things are not quite as good as they were before. In fact, they ended up having to hire a boat to go across the river there. This was when a big storm came in, and then this was after the storm. So it looks a little nicer there. And actually, she's decided she has a gift for photography, which I think you can see. Now, you remember that movie, Madagascar? Yeah, I took that movie to Switzerland so they could watch that for training for coming to here. I did make a joke about that, but I guess they didn't learn that much from that movie. That's actually supposed to be a video that never seems to run with the kids dancing. Okay, now I got to find the other one. Now, this is going to be ministries in Kyiv and then also in Egypt. At a missions conference I was at in January this year, ran into a friend who is, I found out was Free Grace. And I said, oh, I want to talk to this guy. I didn't know that was his position before. And I happened to mention to him that I'd been on vacation in Egypt, and I taught in Egypt at a church at one of the resort cities. And he said, you've taught in Egypt? He said, I just got put in charge of the Middle East for BEE, if you're familiar with them. And so now I'm teaching in Egypt with him, and I've been to Egypt three different times, working with some Christians, but a lot of them are Muslim, what we call MBBs, Muslim background believers. And that's a whole different world. There's a lot of pressure on them from the government and from the police and other things like that. So they're the best people to reach other Muslims. So we're trying to disciple them, and we've got a program we're going through with them. So that's kind of top secret. I mean, I can't tell you how, when, why, or where, but I trust you. So now this is a place called the Chernobyl Hospital. There's no like Chernobyl people there now, but apparently it's one of the places where they first sent people from Chernobyl. Actually, the girl that's my translator right now was born in Chernobyl. She was about 1 year old when the thing went off, and her dad was one of the big players there. And during the summer, we'd have 50 to 70 kids outside. A buddy of mine is actually a friend of mine's ministry. That's his translator to the left. It's me in the middle. And he goes out there three times a week. He also has a ministry at a chest hospital, where he goes three nights a week. And Katya was working with him, but he's a member of our church. And I go out with him periodically because it's just a good place to do ministry. That's actually a magic Bible right there where I can do some tricks with it and show them some principles about understanding the Bible with that. And this is Katya. She's translating for me. She was working with him. And she's just really animated. She's just really good at working with the kids. You can never really see all the kids in any one picture, but we've probably got well over 50 there. And what we're doing there, we've got a Bible verse. And we're drilling them on a Bible verse, which to me is a real important thing to do. That's something I want to include in all my classes as much as possible. And we also give out Bibles as well. We've got some pretty good sources for Bibles over there, and they've got some newer translations. The old Russian translation is like our King James, but worse. Okay, and so for kids, it's got words and phrases. It's just almost impossible. But we've got a lot of newer translations, and we give out stuff to them. And there you can see, of course, Viera Gospoda Jesusa Christa I Spasosia, da? Okay. Well, you can see it, but I'm not speaking in tongues, believe me. The girl to the left is sort of my adopted daughter over there, and she's actually got the Evangelcube in her hand. Katya's got one as well, and with a big group, we like to use two of them so the kids can see a little bit better. And I think she's 14 there. At age 13, she started translating for me. And at age 14, I was teaching her and her sister and a few other kids how to give the gospel. And frankly, she did the Evangelcube better than any of our students in our college. However, she's still a teenager, and I'm learning a lot about that. This is the ministry in the chest hospital. Daryl is the guy in the back. He's from our church. And Katya was working with him, and you see they've given out a bunch of balloons to the kids. Almost everybody here has got, when I teach the eye hospital, most of these kids don't even have glasses. I can't figure out what they're doing there. I mean, they're just, you know, rarely does someone ever even have an operation. But the chest hospital, this is a serious place. And the cancer hospital that we used to teach in, we can't get in at the moment, that was really grim sometimes. But it was a great place to go. The first time I went over there in 99, one of the translators said, would you like to go to the cancer hospital? And inside I was going, I don't want to go to the cancer hospital. I don't like hospitals. But I knew it was the right thing to do, and so I went, and we've had a good ministry there for a long, long time. You'll see a few pictures of that. In fact, there's the cancer hospital right there. And believe it or not, that little girl in my lap, could, at the age of 3, could say, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you'll be saved. She memorized it. All those kids did. There's more pictures of the kids. A lot of the kids have got their heads shaved because they're on chemotherapy. The gentleman in the back left is my pastor in Houston, Bruce Bumgartner, if you've ever heard of him. The lady beside him is our church translator, Margaret, and she's just about the sweetest lady there is. We used to be able to get back in the rooms with them, but they won't let us do that anymore. In fact, right now they're not letting us in there either. And when you went back in the rooms, that's when you would see some stuff that was a lot worse because the kids were too sick to come up and come to the class. That's also the place that we've actually had the most opposition from the Russian Orthodox Church. We've actually had almost some knockdown dragouts there. The eye hospital we just get kicked out of on a fairly regular basis lately, probably because I was bragging for years about what a great ministry it was. This is a detention center. One of our students is one of our graduates now. But working with kids at the detention center. And this is another one of those things. You never know what kind of group you're going to get. You know, what age are they going to be? You know, and you say, well, I'm going to teach thus and so lesson tonight. No. You can't. You just go and you take a bunch of stuff and you're prepared and you know the lessons. They're not that hard. And you adjust it for the age because you never know what age is going to be there that time. Is it going to be mostly girls? Is it going to be mostly guys? And then you end up really teaching to the ones that are paying attention. And I taught in the Marines. I taught in a foam company for 16 years, so teaching comes fairly easy to me. This is also the same place. Picture's a little bit older. Our assistant pastor is in the left-hand corner over there. But these are Bible stories that we've handed out here, and they've got Bibles also. But sometimes we got a big group of kids there, and then other times there only might be 4 or 5. Just never know. Yeah. Semper Gumby. Be flexible. This is my favorite ministry. This is the eye hospital. One of our students is over there in the left in the red, but there's an awful lot of people in red. He finally got his hair cut, but not before his wedding. He's the one person that I've married or done his wedding. Let me rephrase that. And his he graduated this year, and his wife is in her second year. But everybody here, you can see these kids have got Bibles. We would gather them in a cafeteria, and we'd have generally take an hour, but we could do anything we wanted. I mean, just complete freedom to do stuff. Now, where do you think that is? These kids were too cute. And I love little girls, and they were just cute. And this was, this is the church I taught at before. I wasn't teaching this night, but I just had to take a picture with them. And the girl with the kid in her lap is the girl who's translated for me most this past year. But most of my translators are college students, and eventually they graduate from college, and they got to go to work, and then I got to find new translators. The other thing is you don't usually find too many guys that really want to work with kids as much. This young man in the kind of gray, he is one of our students. He's a pastor. We started a church in Lviv, which is in the western part of Ukraine, and he just got ordained. You'll see that picture towards the end. But that's his church, literally meeting in his home. This, my translator's in the middle down there on the bottom. She's gone to a free college. So as a result, you have to pay the government back by teaching in a high school or some other school for the government for a few years. Now, she only has three classes this year, but last year she had this group. They were 10th graders then. And she's got the same group of kids three times a week now. They're 11th graders, and that's their last year of high school. Well, I started helping her out, took my electric guitar down and, you know, played some loud, crazy music for them, and then we went and did movies and some other stuff. But my main goal was to get a Bible study started with them. And it took a good 6-7 months before it came to fruition, but we started it about 6 weeks ago, and I had about 5 weeks of Bible class with them. Many as five and as few as one, but one of the boys was really interested. And then the last class I had before I came over here, instead of just going through the Gospels as we were going through the Gospel of Mark, I really gave them the Gospel this time. And I think we've got three new believers. One pretty much for sure. It's being hard to say with teenagers. I didn't want to put too much pressure on them. Plus, the translator wasn't there that day. But since it's an English class, we do it with Russian Bibles and English Bibles, and it's just worked out really well. Some kind of branching out into different stuff. This is my two youngest daughters in the back, the ones that adopted me, my translator, and then this is out at the orphanage, which we get to periodically. Not as much as we used to. This is our college graduating class last May, and the six people standing in the back are the students that graduated, two-year college, and that's the one that Bob teaches at. I'll be teaching Romans there in the middle of February. And, of course, there's Jim Myers there on the left. Now, we had a camp this summer. We had five Americans come over. And one time we had some people come over a few years ago, and Jim mentioned something about me putting up the Americans. And I said, you mean putting up with the Americans? That group was not as much. This group, these guys were great. I mean, they were just... three of them were from one church. They were just much more mature. They had their act together, and we had a great camp. We had to go about 4 hours away though to save money. But I went with a specific plan. I did not want a group of kids this time. We had enough Americans to take groups, and then with just a couple of our Ukrainian staff helped out. What I had in mind was stealing kids from other camps. And now same camp location, but there's, you know, lots of different groups that come in there. And so it was something we prayed about, and I just had this is on my mind, and I told one of the translators. And so he kind of kept on the lookout for me. And eventually, I think it was the second day, I started playing with some other kids in the luncheon area. And next thing you know, we had three Bible classes with these kids later on during the week. And they were great. I mean, it was just perfect. This is it was supposed to be a group of teens, but you can see some of these are not teens. They were the cutest group that was there, though. Oh, I'm getting waxed. there's always, you know, it's not a food fight at least, but there's always a water fight. Counseling the children, giving massage therapy. That's Katya, who's in Madagascar. This is after she's had a plane crash. There's a game called Plane Crash. Russians have got more games than you can imagine. They're good at it, they love it, and they're easily entertained. This is when you get old. Feet hurt. Making the gospel bracelets, I don't know if you've ever seen these things. There's all kinds of different gospel bracelets, but a buddy of mine created one many years ago. I used that, and it's very effective. It's very simple. The only good meal we got at that camp, it was great location, but the chow was not good. Now, here we've got, this is the other kids I had. I ended up having as many kids in my group as we had in our whole camp. I had 25 kids and 5 teachers at one time or another, doing the Bible verse again. In fact, they're actually doing the second Bible verse there. And their teachers are helping me out. They're holding up the Evangelcube. And you can see some of the kids there. And twice I had one of our graduates translate for me, and one day I had my daughter translate for me. And it was basically just like doing a program at the eye hospital. It was just simple. These kids were easy to entertain. They loved playing. They kept, hey, teach us another lesson. Teach us another lesson. I can do that. And there's a good picture of most of the gang. Now, these are the Americans in church. Well, when we have a camp, we try to end it on Saturday all the time. That way the kids can kind of naturally roll into coming to church on Sunday, which is, you know, besides giving the gospel, we do want to get them to come to church. And that was some of the Americans. And then the kids are singing one of their camp songs. Everybody gets a flower. And this was kind of the leader of the Americans. She's a good kid. Notice the gospel bracelet on her hand. This gentleman that's in that picture is one of our graduates. His name is Sasha Rubchenko. He's the one, him and his wife, made a trip to Cairo last summer to do evangelism, and then he's in Iran and Afghanistan now. And just the kind of guy that'll, you know, he'd be in a bus line, and the students have told me he just starts giving the gospel to people in the bus line. And I haven't worked with him that much because he doesn't speak hardly any English, so I just haven't got to know him as well as others. Titus Kennedy, who's in the bottom right, his father's a pastor in Spokane. He's over there, he's teaching, this is second year, he's teaching Greek and Hebrew in the college every day. And then he also has a Bible study on Saturday nights. And this is his Bible study. One of our students graduated and went back to the town called Zhytomyr, which is about an hour and a half west of Kyiv, depending upon the traffic. And we're doing vacation Bible school there at a camp. And that's just whole bunch of the kids there. And this is not this past summer, but 2 summers ago. But we did, I think, 3 camps over there I did with him. He's got a whole lot of other things going on in his church as well. And he's actually started some theological training for pastors and other people that are interested. This is not Kyiv. This is Egypt. This is one of our groups. The groups are kind of secret units. They're not supposed to know the other groups. Of course, that hasn't worked out as well as we wanted. But big emphasis on security there. And we're really trying to train people who are eventually going to be able to train others. And it's just going to take a while. We make about 4 trips a year. They go through self-paced material, and then we try to facilitate it and kind of put it all together for them when we come in and spend about 4 or 5 days with each group. So I've been there 3 times this year now. This is one of our group leaders. The boss is on the right side. That's another one of the groups. The young man in the middle, who's crippled, comes from Morocco, which is a fur piece from where we're at. This was the last trip in November. This was a new group. I'd never worked with this group before. They actually had a very serious security problem and could not meet the previous time, so we did a back-to-back session with them, and I went and picked them up by myself for a while. But they were a young group, but they were really, really interested. Another gentleman was helping me teach that. The translator is a gentleman in the Czech shirt there. He is a pastor who speaks English, and you may not know this if you've never been to Cairo. You've seen the pictures of the pyramids, I'm sure, and you think, oh, these things are isolated. They're way out in the middle of nowhere. Wrong. the city comes all the way up almost to the edge of the pyramids from one side. And his church is called Pyramid Independent Baptist Church. PIBC. He's a good guy. I really enjoyed working with him and working with those kids. This is the eye hospital. This is when we were getting back and started again just about a month and a half ago. This is probably a couple weeks before we got kicked out. We also have, like Bob was saying, we've got a lot of different ministries going on. A couple years ago, we had Vacation Bible School in the neighborhood of our college. We just bought this new college building. In fact, the lady that helped put us on, her and her husband has just graduated from Chafer Seminary, and they just came over, and they're working full-time with us now for a couple years at least. But the guy I told you that I did his wedding, well, this is his wife there, and this is the Saturday morning class that we have in our college. And these kids are just super interested. The two girls in the middle I know are coming to church. I would guess probably all these kids have become believers. I taught them once. They seem to know quite a bit. But I try to go sample a lot of the different ministries. This one I'll probably start spending more time in. If I get locked out of the eye hospital, I'm going to spend more time with these kids. But I'm also working on something else. In addition to going to Egypt with BEE, BEE split apart into two different groups. And there's another part of BEE, now they have a different name, but they're working in Eastern Europe. And originally I was trying to get involved with them because I thought, well, gee, it wouldn't be very hard for me to go to Czech Republic or Hungary or something like that from where I live. But they were very slow in responding, so I worked with this other group. But now I'm going to be doing some training with this other group in March. This is my pastor who was just over there in March, or just a couple weeks ago, rather, in December. And this is Victor Invasia Munko. Victor became a believer and led his nephew to the Lord. And then his nephew came to our Bible college first and then eventually brought his uncle. And now Vasya is the pastor of a church in Lviv, and Victor is the assistant pastor and is going to take over our church eventually. And then there's our main translator there. She knows all the theological terms. She's a brilliant woman. Very, very compassionate. I have a new girlfriend. Her name is Elona. And she actually comes to church with some people from Campus Crusade. We've got quite a few Campus Crusaders in our church, and our students are working with some of them in the colleges as well. But I just started playing with her a little bit, and then I found out from one of the guys, they said her parents don't love her. And I'm thinking, like, what is wrong with parents? She's a cutie, but she's as heavy as a brick. I picked her up one time, and I was going to break my back. I do things like that. But she's, in the games I play with the kids at the hospitals, I am always the elephant. And you say, why am I an elephant? And now I'm getting elephant gifts all the time. Well, I went to get some new glasses one time in Kyiv, and I went into this place with my translator, who was a guy, and they had this big stuffed elephant, you know. I said, oh, what's the word for that in Russian? He said, Sloan. I thought, four letters. I can remember that. So we have a jungle game we play with the kids, and I'm always the elephant. So I'm the elephant, and that young lady is my little Slonionic, which means little baby elephant. And that is the presentation. I can answer any questions or make up answers if you want. Up to you. My purpose was just to kind of try to show you what's going on. I think pictures are far more effective at that.
We have the microphone ready, too. If anyone has questions, we can be passing this around like we do on question and answer night.
I'm not the Bible answer man, though. That's him.
In Madagascar?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there other missionary groups in Madagascar?
There's probably quite a few. She works with YBAM, Youth with a Mission, which frankly is an organization that just takes people in from all over the theological spectrum. And, of course, she's not that way. But they've partnered with a group called Mercy Missions. And Mercy Missions is the ones that's going in and building the medical facilities, and then they go in and give the gospel. And they went through, I think, some pretty good training. I went to some of their training stuff in Switzerland to check on her one time. I think she was just kind of lonely, and she asked me to come over and kind of look at stuff.
Thank you.
But that organization past giving the gospel, I'd be a little concerned about anything they would do past that.
Talking about Katia when he said that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they required them to go through a 3-month training session. They call DTS, and it's not Dallas Theological Seminary. And she went through it there in Switzerland, and that's how she picked up French, because the teachers were either speaking French or speaking English. Well, if they spoke French, it would be translated into English. If they spoke English, it would be translated into French. And she's so good at languages, she just picked it up without any problem.
What is the penalty for a Muslim becoming a Christian in Egypt?
Interesting you should ask that. In this country, what do we use for identification? Our driver's licenses, vast majority of the time. Okay. In most other countries, they have an internal passport. Okay. And they've got this in Russia and Ukraine and stuff like that. And then to go out of the country, you have to get a different kind of passport. Well, in Egypt, people are theoretically 10% Christian. Okay, there's not that many believers, but if you're Coptic or you're not Muslim, you are therefore Christian. And so when you're born or shortly thereafter, you get identification and it says you're Muslim or you're Christian. Okay, now it is illegal for a Muslim to try to change his documents. And actually, that was something that one guy tried to do and make a big deal of it, and then they were threatening to kill him and stuff like that. And it's just a real big problem. It's one of the reasons why a Muslim that becomes a believer is now under so much pressure. And it's even worse for the women. You can't look at a guy by the way he's dressed, you know, because there's so many people that dress Western, you know, if they're businessmen or something like that. And you can't look at a guy and tell whether he's Muslim or, you know, unless he's wearing the Muslim type of clothes. But a woman there, all the Muslim women are supposed to have the head covering on and maybe even a lot more than that. And some of them go to the extent where they're in all black, they wear glasses, even though they don't need glasses. They wear clear glasses to cover their eyes, and they wear gloves on their hands so that no part of their body is showing at all. Now, when you go from that to start wearing like what you're wearing right now, that's pretty obvious. And so the women are under a lot more pressure, because when they become believers and they stop wearing all that gear, which in that temperature I can't figure out how they can wear, it's very, very noticeable. So, I mean, one of our guys had been beaten up by the police, and he was an older gentleman, and the police were just picking on him and just really annoyed me.
Well, I was kind of wondering, you answered part of my question. I have a friend who is Muslim who lives in Kuwait, and she's married to a Muslim, and she's been sending me emails and asking about my faith as a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I notice she only emails me when her husband's asleep, but she's definitely interested in asking questions.
There's just a lot of pressure. There's social pressure. There can be government and police pressure as well. It just kind of depends on where you're at, how big a family you have. Some of the guys I've talked to have, you know, told me that, you know, they're still, you know, again, you're dealing with people that may still have 3 generations in one home. And so, you know, mom and dad are still Muslim. And now this guy's become a believer and his wife's a believer and he's trying to raise his kids as believers. And the mom's going to high end of the right on this stuff. And, you know, she's calling the police sometimes and trying to kick him out of her house. And it's even worse with women. A couple of the women in our study groups are really under a lot of pressure, and it is pretty obvious. Mm. I'm not sure if I've answered your question, but it almost depends with the individuals. But
you mentioned the Russian Orthodox Church. What other religious opposition do you have over there to your ministry?
Good way to tell a joke. The Russian Baptists are one of the biggest problems we have in some cases. They're very, very legalistic. The The Reformation did not get that far east, okay? So people basically, I mean, you've got, when they were under the Soviet environment, you've got men who suffered for their faith. I mean, I know guys, pastors have been in jail 3 and 4 times. And I've read a lot of other books about some of the suffering that people have done. But these were people that basically believed you could lose your salvation. Okay? And all the attendant pitfalls of that type of doctrine. And yet they were faithful to what they believed. Well, the faithful people tended to stand out, and those are the people that other people followed. So that is their tradition over there, is that you can lose your salvation. And in a lot of the Baptist churches, you got to come forward. You got to take the microphone and confess all your sins in front of everybody. That's what they think Romans 10 says. And so they can be, you know, even they have wanted to kick us, try to get us kicked out sometimes, because they actually have, it's not like Baptist churches here that are independent. They have a Baptist hierarchy over there. And they can even tell you who your pastor is going to be in certain cases. So they can be a real problem. There's kind of a funny joke that they tell, and it's, you know, heaven, the Apostle Paul's got his office, you know, Russian Orthodox priest goes in, spends about 20 minutes, comes out later with the Apostle Paul. Yeah, you know, you were right. We had the thing with the icons wrong. You know, we just messed it up. You know, what can I say? Catholic priest goes in with him. About 30 minutes later, he comes out and says, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, we had this thing about Mary, and we just had it all messed up. Russian Baptist, or Ukrainian Baptist, goes in with the Apostle Paul. 30 minutes, hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. Finally, the door bursts open, and they both come walking out, and Paul says, I wrote the book. I know what I meant. And that's kind of what we're up against. I mean, you know, the idea of trying to sit down and say, look, grammatical, you know, historical, cultural, understand. It can be very, very difficult. Just explain to somebody that you can't lose your salvation. I mean, it takes a long time. The first class that we teach, and we do it every year, because I actually believe the students have got to hear this twice. Our classes are generally in 2-week modules. The first class we teach is soteriology, you know, the doctrine of salvation. And frequently, you know, we try to get the best students we can, but, you know, again, look at the populace you're drawing from. They can be good people, but they still believe you can lose your salvation because they just haven't been taught anything else. And so they come in, and we got to teach them this stuff, and the first thing they're doing is, whoa, wait, what about this, bro? What about that? You know, and you don't have time to deal with all this, so it takes a while for it to sink in. And then we do it the second year around, so everybody gets it twice, and usually by the second year around, they go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I got this. This makes sense. So, I mean, some real serious issues there. Pentecostal church over there, too, is just whacked out. I mean, there's Pentecostal Orthodox people. And there's a Nigerian pastor who's got this Pentecostal church, and he gets together with all their Pentecostals, and they just do all kinds of fun things. Now, do they agree on the gospel? Not remotely, but the fact that we're Pentecostal is far more important than anything else. So it's just stuff like that that's scary and weird, and you know, not a whole lot different than what you see on TV here sometimes, too. Okay. Appreciate the opportunity.
Anything else? Other questions? Yes, right here.
Have you run across much influence from the South Koreans? Because we've been getting news here in the States that the South Koreans are just sending their missionaries all over the world.
There's a lot of South Koreans in Russia. I'm not sure about Ukraine specifically. However, some of the girls that I know from Campus Crusade, the Campus Crusade Worldwide Conference was held in Seoul this past year. And I think I know at least 3 of the girls that went. And they came back and they said, that church is on fire. So these people get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and they go to church to go to prayer meeting. And they go to prayer meeting every morning before they go to work. And then they've got the regular church stuff. And then a lot of them are there all Saturday night. I mean, pray in church. Ooh, I mean, that can do some real damage in the world. And, I mean, they're just saying that these girls, and the one girl particularly is a very, very mature believer. And she came back and she was really, really impressed by what was going on there in South Korea. And I'm thinking the kind of the same thing, too. I look at America going, God, I'm glad I live over in Ukraine. you know. And I'm kind of looking at South Korea from what I've heard. And again, this is not firsthand, but from what I've heard, you mean this could be a new center of the gospel going out? Is that part of the world? Good question, though.
The gentleman who's working in Iran and Afghanistan, what kind of interactions he had with those governments?
I don't know. We have an Iranian pastor that we do some work with, and we help support somewhat. In fact, this guy is supposed to be put on something like, remember, Radio Free Europe. He's going to do Bible classes and then beam it into Iran someplace. But he's a pastor in the western part of the city, but he comes to our Bible classes a lot. And I think what's happened with this guy that's gone to Iran, I think his brother married a girl from Iran, and so that's his connection to get into Iran, is through family like that. I don't think he's got much of a problem with the government, and part of that is because, you know, it used to be a great blessing to be an American. I mean, you could get into all sorts. When I first went into Belarus, you know, back in the 90s, I mean, you were an American. You were imputed with coolness. I mean, particularly by the kids, you couldn't do anything wrong. I mean, you know, this was wonderful. Well, now, because of a lot of the stuff that's gone on with the wars, you know, American is just a dirty name. But Ukrainian, that's just kind of like used to be part of Russia, so that's like a nothing. A Ukrainian goes down to Egypt or something like that, they don't think twice. It's just someone's come to spend money. That's cool. When I was walking around there the first time with three girls that were Ukrainian, two girls from all three of them from my church. Katya was one of them. She went to translate for me. We were speaking English most of the time, just because I wouldn't understand the Russian. And in this resort city, I mean, people are selling stuff all the time. There's souvenir shops every 10 feet. And they would always ask you, oh, where are you from? Where are you from? Welcome to Egypt. Where are you from? You know, with Kiev, Ukraine. Oh, well, they're familiar with that because a lot of Ukrainians go to Egypt for holidays. And, well, you know, and then they would tell me, oh, your English is very, very good. I studied in America, so, you know. But being Ukrainian, this was just no big deal. So it's sort of like you're kind of invisible. There's no... You know, I mean, from our standpoint, you know, a Muslim comes into America and immediately kind of the flag goes up as someone we potentially need to watch. Well, an American goes into their country, they're, you know, into Iran, they're going to say the same thing. A Ukrainian comes in, so what? They don't care. There's no stigma attached to that. And so that's why a lot of these other countries can do great jobs, you know, as missionaries, because they can now start getting places that maybe we can't get so easily.
We've been praying for Ulan for a couple of years now. Has there been any more news from him? Is he still in Berlin?
I have not heard anything on him in a long, long time.
Okay.
And so I flat cannot tell you.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, if you will close us in prayer, we'll be okay. Dismissed.
Father, I thank you that we have here a church that's a bastion of grace, the trust in your holy and your righteous character and your word, which is impeccable, cannot ever be broken, cannot ever change. Father, I just pray that you'll sanctify the believers here, bless them in your truth. And again tonight, Father, we bring Gary before the throne of grace. And I praise you for his life just by listening to people pray about him tonight. I can tell that he's had a wonderful effect on the believers in this church and probably on a lot of unbelievers as well. I just pray that you will gather him gently to your home, to his home, to his true home tonight. Father, we ask your blessing. Thank you for this time together. In Christ's name, amen.